changed at the time.
Well, what I was told was the meeting was scheduled for 10:30, so
wow.
I was pulled out of cabinet. Anyway, maybe that.
Yeah, no, then let's leave it at that. But anyway, we're starting. I think we have a full compliment. Welcome, Minister, in your delegation. We are all in your hands today, because you are supposed, with your entity, to give us your APPs for the financial year 2018-2019. And we are in your hands, and we think at least at most, Minister, 1.5 hours should do to do all your presentation, and including your entities, and so that we can be able to provide members, give members time to interact with your presentation. So according to my watch, it's now 10:20. At least at 11:30, if we should be wrapping up at that time with the presentation and be able to engage with your presentation as members. I'm not sure if that is fine with you, Minister.
I think we'll be
okay then, over to you. Thank you very much. The introduction to you shall do as and when we speak, because of the interest of time. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair, and morning to colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity, and let me at the very outset indicate that we were supposed to be here with my full complement of the ministry, the two ministers. You may be aware that the deputy, and I'm sure an apology has been submitted on behalf of the minister, deputy minister of justice and constitutional development, who has to at the same time address the portfolio committee on justice relating to the hate crimes bill, and that I'm also expected soon after here to join them there to introduce the new bill on international crimes and the whole notice of withdrawal position from the ICC that is a matter we're familiar with. I have with me officials representing the leadership of the various departments and entities under this portfolio. And I think in the interest of time, I will not seek to introduce them at this stage. I'm sure when they get to the business of presenting their respective APPs, they would be in a position to introduce their respective teams. Well, let me start by indicating that the Justice Value Chain partners have committed themselves to delivering justice to all our citizens, make it accessible, affordable, and effective. And to realize this objective, and in particular in relation to the Department of Justice, we have continuously paid attention to the continuous improvement of our work and the transformation of the justice system and the legal profession. Without addressing the transformation imperative, we cannot effectively deliver justice to all our citizens. The budget for the capital works in the current financial year in relation to the Justice Department is 819,750,000 rand. In addition, 33,611,000 is allocated to upgrading of infrastructure, whilst 31,838,000 is allocated to maintenance. This allocation includes budget for magistrate court and the Mpumalanga High Court, whose completion is 96% complete. I will just add that last week, Monday, I had the opportunity to visit the Durban High Court to inspect progress there. We are virtually at the stage of concluding all the procurement processes. We are in discussions with the Minister of Defence to release the land, the adjacent land there, which will be necessary as we do the expansion for the extensions that are envisaged for that, as well as the renovation that are envisaged for that court. As we reported during the budget vote in the NA, Director Generals of Departments of Justice and Public Works are attending to delays in the completion of the access route linking the court, that is the Mpumalanga High Court, and the main road there, that is the Samora Machel main entry into Mbombela, where the court is situated. We're confident that the court will become functional during this financial year. Another major infrastructure project is additional facilities to the Durban High Court, which has been alluded to increase courtrooms and judges' chambers and holding cells to the existing infrastructure. During this financial year, we will also complete the construction of 4 new magistrate courts at BG in the Eastern Cape, Port Shepstone in KwaZulu-Natal, Durban High Court, Boysen in Gauteng, and Plattenberg Bay in Western Cape. We have made significant progress to achieve demographic representativity in the judiciary. As of December 2017, a total of 167 magistrates were appointed in a single a batch. Of these, 162 are black in the generic sense, whilst 14 are white. Women constituted the majority of the appointments at 101 of the 176. As at May 31, 2018, black judges constituted 56% or 167 out of 253 judges nationally. This translates into 34% or 86 white judges, a total of 64% males or 162 judges, and 36% females, or a total of 91. Furthermore, the department is developing policy and the legislative framework on community courts and the optimal use of advice centers as additional mechanisms for enhancing access to justice. We are pleased that the traditional courts bill is now before Parliament following its approval by Cabinet in December 2016. This mechanism, including the court annexed mediation services, which are currently being piloted in 42 regional courts, provide alternative forms of access to justice and alleviate the burden on the mainstream courts. They also provide space for the utilization of paralegals and other practitioners, such as mediators, who make a valuable contribution to alternative dispute resolution within communities on a daily basis. This year, the court annexed mediation services will be extended to all regional courts countrywide. As part of the broader judicial transformation program, the department has initiated a comprehensive overhaul of the Magistrates' Courts Act, which, although amended several times since its promulgation in 1944, retains features of the apartheid era. We have tabled the prevention and combating of hate crime and hate speech bill, on which Deputy Minister John Jeffrey is currently briefing the portfolio committee, as I indicated at the beginning. The International Crimes Bill was also introduced into Parliament in December 2017. I will be briefing the portfolio committee on the bill immediately after this overview, as I indicated as well. The envisaged new legislation will grant our courts the power to exercise extra-territorial jurisdiction to hear cases involving international crimes committed beyond our national borders if the alleged perpetrator is a South African citizen or is otherwise ordinarily resident in South Africa or happens to be physically present here. Our courts will also have jurisdiction if the crime was committed outside our territory against a South African citizen or resident. Let me just indicate that I suppose at an opportune time we will get the opportunity to give a fuller briefing on this matter in the same manner that we intend to do later when we join the portfolio committee proceedings today. But I'll be more than happy if colleagues want me to expatiate on any aspect relating to the matter. Another important part of our work is the improvement of public confidence in the criminal justice system. Work is in this regard underway to place victims of crime at the center of the criminal justice system as one of the objectives of this project. In this regard, we are pursuing an integrated criminal justice strategy which will see fundamental amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act of 1977 and other applicable laws to enhance protection of victims of crime. Recent incidents of femicide and gender-based violence against women and children point to a breakdown of the social fabric in our society. The justice system must act on these crimes and do so swiftly, decisively, and proportionately. Gender-based violence is one of the categories of offenses which the envisaged amendments to the Criminal Procedure Act seek to address. We also intend to review the length of minimum sentences for this heinous crime. We had cabinet pass 2 weeks ago, for example, an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act that would remove the prescription limit of 20 years on all other sexually related offences that otherwise are currently not covered under the existing Section 18 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which lists crimes which do not and are subject to the common law 20-year prescription period. And this will ensure that women and children who are victims of sexual offences other than those currently stated and where those offences may have occurred more than 20 years since would still be able to bring press charges even after the expiration of that period of time. We will continue to operationalize sexual offences court, which at present stands at 75. We have stepped up efforts to validate the database of the National Register for Sexual Offenders, NRSO, and are simultaneously developing a foolproof reporting system to eliminate inaccuracies a special project team involving the department and the South African Police Services has been established for this purpose. Let me clarify that we are of the view that it would be inappropriate to bring that register into full operation with all its flaws, as the risk would be to violate the rights of those who may have wrongly found their names into the register, and that could expose the state naturally to all manner of liability, which would be undesirable. I'm informed that almost 9 years down the line, since the legislation was passed, and one must accept criticism for the time it has taken for us to clean up that register, to make sure that it's fully operational, and to ensure that it is useful or put to use to ensure that more children are protected from pedophiles who find themselves into various areas of service to children, and that continue to make our children vulnerable to their predatory behavior. The process of the alignment of the ministerial districts and high court jurisdictional boundaries with municipal and provincial boundaries is being finalized. Since the commencement of the flagship project in December 2014, we have established an integrated and inclusive magisterial district in 6 provinces. The rollout to the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Western Cape will be completed during the current financial year. As we reported during the budget vote in the NA, 2 weeks ago, Legal Aid South Africa received its 16th consecutive unqualified audit opinion for the 2016-2017 financial year. It continues to record increased progress in rendering legal aid to those who cannot afford. Additionally, and as an example of creativity and innovation in service delivery, Legal Aid has established a social media presence on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to communicate with the public. These successes were recorded in the backdrop of a budget deficit of 45.3 million rand during the last financial year. This deficit is projected to rise to 92.8 million rand during this financial year. During the last financial year, the national. Before I proceed, let me just indicate that I've written to the Minister of Finance to raise concerns relating to the shrinking of legal aid budget, which in real terms simply means the cutthroat in that legal aid with this kind of financial situation might not be able to provide the necessary legal assistance in all cases where we have a constitutional responsibility. Finance is steadfast that they are not going to open the ceiling and that they can only consider us when the medium term budget policy statement is issued. So we have in the meantime spoken to Justice to look into their bigger budget, even though it's experienced a year cut as well, to see in what way assistance could be rendered to ensure that no court in South Africa fails to sit because of such issues as human resource constraints. So the idea is to take a holistic view of this by making sure that all the entities who and departments who have a stake in the functionality of a court are able to provide the necessary human resource capacity. So the OCJ must make sure that there are registrars in every court. Justice must make sure that there are clerks of court at every court, interpreters at every court. Legal aid must make sure that there are legal aid attorneys to represent clients at every court. NPA must make sure that there is a prosecutor in every criminal court so that the court can proceed. And of course, the Deputy Minister was here, he would talk more because he has the magistracy delegated to him to talk more about efforts that we're making to ensure enhanced efficiency in the functioning of the lower courts, which should include the issue of sitting hours of courts, which has been a burning issue. And different people, stakeholders will blame each other as to why courts are failing to sit, ranging from professionals who must also be held accountable to magistrates who sometimes shortchange the system with a number of hours that they allow courts to sit. During the last financial year, the National Prosecuting Authority secured greater convictions of cases it brought before the court. The greatest number of these were in the regional court at 96%, followed by 91% in the High Court and 80% in the lower court. This represented the highest conviction rate performance during the last two decades. A total of 179 convictions were of where government were of which were of government officials charged for corruption or related offenses involving amounts of more than 5 million grand. You may recall the project under the ACTT, the Anti-Corruption Task Team, which sought to target the big one by setting a target of 5 million as a threshold for prioritizing corruption matters so as to use it as a tool to track our effort to eradicate major corruption in our government. A total of for its part, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, AFU, has continued to play a critical role in the fight against corruption. During the last financial year, the unit obtained freezing orders to the value of 1.85 billion rand relating to corruption, where the amounts involved were more than 5 million rand. An additional 242.8 million rand was recorded for recovery in terms of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, POCA. You may recall also there that a significant percentage of that amount related to the case, the 1.6 billion rand case. Just confirming with the NPA that it was the McKenzie matter where you'd recall that by a settlement agreement we managed to secure commitment to repay that amount of 1.6 billion rand. That particular transaction. The Special Investigation Unit, SIU, continues to play an important role in the investigation of maladministration and corruption within the state institutions. During the 2017-18 financial year, the unit recovered assets to the value of 33.5 million rand and secured the setting aside of administrative decisions to the value of 779 million rand. For its part, the correctional just before I could get there, let me also just indicate that as the justice portfolio, we, and that includes the entities, were actively involved in a number of specific projects, including the Northwest situation. And there has been a number of presidential proclamations that have been issued, especially in relation to certain municipalities there. We are also actively involved in the task team that the president has set up for the political killings in KZN. We were meant to meet there, for example, for the second time tomorrow, and that's been deferred for next week, but we did meet last week, Monday, to evaluate each case and what has happened to it, and to look at ways of ensuring that we fast-track investigation and enhance collaboration between the key law enforcement agencies in ensuring that every case is properly investigated and that perpetrators are brought to book. For its part, the Correctional Service Department, DCS, has continued to work towards solidifying our system, which is meant to truly rehabilitate offenders so that they can be reintegrated back into society. The department forms part of the overall criminal justice system and complements our country's national security system into contributing to the nation's sense of state and security. This role and obligation issues from various a fundamental objective of the Department of Correctional Services is the rehabilitation of offenders through the provision of education, skills development, and an environment for broader personal and spiritual introspection. At present, the DCS manages 218 fully fledged community corrections offices spread across all the 9 provinces, which provide services to the accused and offenders. The categories of persons placed under community correction are parolees, probationers, and awaiting trial persons who may not be kept in correctional facilities at any particular point in time. As at 31 March 2017, a total of 69,271 persons were registered under the system of community correction. Of these, 51,785 were parolees, 16,178 were probation, and 1,308 were awaiting trial persons. Between May 2014 and June 2018, the department released 25.89% of life serving offenders on parole. This is the percentage of applicants that eventually get placed on parole, which makes up about a quarter of all the persons who otherwise would be eligible for consideration for parole. So for various reasons, we would grant or refuse parole and this represents the percentage that we would have released of those that would have been eligible and have applied for consideration. I must just explain that contrary to perception out there, parole is not a right. It's not an automatic right. The mere fact that you have done 20 years when you're serving life does not guarantee you or grant you the right to be released upon completing that period of time. You have to be assessed in terms of your suitability for placement on parole based on various reports, psychosocial reports, etc., where we would have assessed you in terms of your risk profile, in terms of your responsiveness to our rehabilitation interventions. And if we're not satisfied that you're a suitable candidate, we simply don't give you a parole. And that's where much of the litigation in corrections happens. I'm told that I get taken to court at least 20 times a week by inmates who are either unhappy with decisions not to grant them or because they feel that their applications have been delayed. And in regard to the latter, we are having a roundtable, we had a roundtable discussion earlier this week led by the NCCS, the National Council for Correctional Services, which, as you know, is led by three judges, to evaluate the parole system and to determine whether it's still relevant, whether it's effective, whether it's efficient, and to identify areas of weakness in the system so that the priority is to ensure that no offender spends another day, another month, another year in a correctional facility when they were actually a suitable candidate for placement on parole or on community correction. But conversely, to make sure equally that as much as we can help it, no offender finds their way back into society and continue from where they left and placing the risk, the lives of our people at risk. So it is that balancing act that we seek to achieve. I mean, as well record here that since the start of the current administration, well, since 2014, we have succeeded in raising the compliance level of all our inmates on parole or on community correction from 85-86% to 98-99%, which means, in simple English, that we have realized a significant reduction, especially in recidivism amongst those that are on community correction, at least those we are able to monitor. Of course, those that have completed their sentences no longer fall under our jurisdiction, but we're looking at developing a study so that we can obtain authentic statistics as to how many people continue to re-offend after they have been through our correction system more broadly, in order to dispel some of the myths about sets that we sometimes don't know where they come from, about the extent of recidivism in South Africa. Over the last 3 years, the continuous increase of offenders has exacerbated the challenge of overcrowding in our correctional facilities. The department is committed to reducing overcrowding in correctional and remand detention facilities to bring them within acceptable levels to minimize diversion into dealing with challenges arising out of overcrowding, as well as properly to deal with the safety and security of inmates. This also includes us ensuring now that we have become members of various international conventions and commitments and our own domestic law and constitution, ensuring that the rights of inmates to decent treatment in our correctional facilities, ensuring that they have access to proper nutrition, to exercise, to skills training and rehabilitation programs, all of which constitute the model of a model correctional system as opposed to a prison system that we have transformed ourselves from post-1994. As part of realizing these objectives, the department is in the process of reviewing and aligning the infrastructure plan in order to construct additional bed space, convert outmoded zinc and asbestos structures, and regain unused bed space. More specifically, a total of 939 additional bed space will be added through the construction or expansion of facilities in Benin, Standerton, Escort, and CMEX prison in Pretoria. Alternative funding models such as public-private partnerships are also being considered in this regard. Let me also just add that the challenges of austerity have put pressure on government infrastructure for public services generally, and that includes our plans to expand the capacity of our infrastructure for both justice in the form of courts as well as corrections in the form of correctional facilities. One of the things we're exploring, especially when it comes to minor maintenance and construction projects, is to develop in-house capacity as part of our skills development program within corrections to use offender labor to help with some of the maintenance works. Obviously, more complex engineering works would still reside with public works for obvious reasons. But we believe that there's a lot of scope for us to utilize, underutilize offender labor, and in the process give practical skills to our offenders. I must say that one of the concerns I've picked up relates to the rate of reabsorption into the world of work of our ex-offenders. There was a conference that they held 2 years ago to raise concerns and to make suggestions. I have requested the department to look closely at ways in which we can ramp up the rate of reabsorption into the socioeconomic life of society of our inmates. The figures that I'm getting currently are particularly concerning, and this is despite the skills that we impart and the education opportunities that we provide to our offenders. But that's a topic in due course that we may want to elaborate on in terms of some of the ideas that are coming through. South Africa will launch the Nelson Mandela Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners in July this year. The Nelson Mandela Rules, which Cabinet has considered in March this year, are a set of universally acknowledged minimum standards for the treatment of prisoners to which member states of the United Nations committed themselves in December 2015. This was basically a renewal of standard rules that have been there for many decades, and the renaming of these rules under the name of our icon as a way of popularizing the significance of treatment, humane treatment of inmates across the world. The rules are in line with our rehabilitative philosophy of corrections and will bring us closer to international principles guidelines and best practice. The UN decision to name the roof after President Mandela is a testimony to the eminent place in which our people struggle for freedom came to reside in the consciousness of humanity. Among other things, this means that as a country, we must appreciate the challenge this places at our feet. We cannot but rise to the occasion to continue to shine the light on humanist values, which our struggles are represented to the rest of the world. We look forward to your esteemed guidance and leadership in ensuring that you exercise your oversight role on us. We focus on the more pertinent issues, and that where we falter, you are there to be the light that shines our way, so that we can bring improvement on our work as we move forward. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. With your permission, Minister, can I request the DC or whoever is delegated to go straight to the nuts and bolts, APP and budget?
Thank you. May I, at this point, perhaps request that unless there will be questions directed at me specifically, I be released to join the other committee to proceed with the other matter of the introduction of the other bill. The Deputy Minister, I'm sure, would be almost complete by now and would be more than happy, I think, to come over to respond to any issues that require the Minister to respond to, at least in relation to the justice family issues. I am not sure if Deputy Minister Makweta will be at any point on the corruption side. If we should share this issue, we can swap.
Maybe with that arrangement, Minister, but I would have planned to do questions and comments at the end of every presentation so that we cover everything.
Thanks.
But can I first check how many questions are directed to the Minister? How many? Three. So, okay, let's do three members. One is going to be Honorable Mikalaki, Honorable Ennis, and then Honorable Mohabi.
Thank you. Ask for half a second. I'll be back.
Okay.
Who's going to take questions for you, Minister?
Yeah, I'll be back in half a minute.
Okay.
I take heart pills.
Oh, okay.
I have my own challenge. I wanted to say so long that our head of strategy is going to give you an abridged version of our annual performance plan. We did receive in the invitation that was sent to the minister specific questions which we have responded to, and the document has in fact been submitted. What we will do in the course of this morning, also taking into account the time constraints, we're going to ask our head of strategy to be more concise in order to give more opportunity for engagement. Sure. But she will only do so after the minister has fielded the questions that honourable members have for him.
All right.
That's.
What is the name of the head of strategy?
It's Ms. Lebo Mpatele Nzasa.
Oh, she was the head.
I appreciate the same time.
question. Because of time, why don't you allow those on to
the minister has requested 1 minute. I think he will be back in no time. He will just allow that. I think we have agreed to that.
Apologies, the lenses protect my heart from overload.
No, we are fine with that, Minister. Honorable Chet, Mikhail, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. It's good to see you again. Minister, if we leave everything that's before us in terms of the figures, the budget, the plans, all the paper plans aside for 1 minute, the two main purposes of the criminal justice system is firstly to effectively bring those who are guilty of crimes to account, and then secondly, to impose a suitable punishment in order to rehabilitate them sufficiently and effectively to return to society and to make a positive contribution. That is the purpose of our criminal justice system. If we do those two things, then the system is working. I think we agree on that aim. Now, it took 4 years, but the President, the Honourable President, finally agreed with us that state capture is real and it's a problem. It needs to be dealt with. And I think you would agree with me that for the criminal justice system to have and to keep and to regain in some instances the trust of the public, which it needs in order to be effective, those who made themselves guilty of state capture must be brought to account. For that reason, I'm going to be very blunt, and I would like a blunt answer in return, that's why we're here. I cannot for the life of me understand why Mr. Abrams is still sitting next to you. I come from the Free State, Vredederi, which Mr. Abrams by now knows quite a lot about. If you read the judgment that was handed down recently, you will see clearly that the judge said, amongst other things, that these persons might even be found guilty at a future stage of these crimes, which implies that the NPA did not go to court prepared, in the sense that the NPA did not do their job. Now, I'm really concerned, Minister. It's not the only case in state capture where the NPA has dropped the ball. If it continues in this manner, the public is not going to see justice being done in terms of state capture. And that would, for many decades to come, harm firstly the reputation of the state as a whole, but in particular the criminal justice system. And that has catastrophic consequences for our country and for your department. My question then is, when are you, as a government, going to get rid, firstly, of Mr. Abrams, and clean up the NPA so that trust in it can be restored? That's my first question. My second question relates to the second part of the duties of the department, which is the rehabilitation of incarcerated individuals. I think it's wonderful that the Mandela rules are implemented. But in practice, we know that with the limited budget and resources, it is sometimes very difficult. We currently, in our correctional facilities, have nothing short of a human rights crisis, which is a sad thing, and I think you, as much as I, would like to see this resolved. I would like to hear from you how you envisage, with the limited resources, to actually implement it in practice and to address these issues, because I think you would agree with me. I've been asking this question for 4 years, and the plan seems to be the same throughout this whole term. But the plan isn't working if it's still not working after 4 years. Something fundamentally needs to change in this system in order to turn it around, because we do not want people leaving jail at the end and not have some form of meaningful rehabilitation. At the same time, I would also think that it might be time for us to review who we put in jail, what kind of jail, and is there an alternative form of either incarceration or punishment rehabilitation? Because the main purpose is not incarceration and punishment. The main purpose is rehabilitation. So I would love to hear your thoughts on that particularly. And the third one is, you spoke quite a bit about parole. And I still, and I think the whole country, still has an issue with the fact that there's one prisoner who managed to go on parole and play golf whilst being on his deathbed for the last how many years? Mr. Shabir Sheikh is still out there. He's on parole, but it's quite a nice life on parole, Minister. Now, the medical board said that they haven't received any requests to look into the doctors who recommended his parole. You also indicated recently that, I don't know whether it's you in person or the department, said that you're not at this stage reviewing his parole. This leaves a lot of questions in the air, and I would like for you to put me at ease, to say that this person, Mr. Shabir Sheikh, will serve the term of his prison, because clearly he was not as sick as he indicated. And that is an issue that needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with frankly. All these questions relate to the trust that the public and us have in your department. Now, you can succeed in everything else, but without this kind of trust, we will never be able to get the trust of the public, and it's the trust of the public that's a cornerstone of the success of this department. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Colleagues. Honourable Members, can I impress upon you that you be briefed with your question? And secondly, can I also inform you that we've got correctional services scheduled to appear before the committee on the 13th of June. I'm sure you won't mind if questions that are pertinent to correctional services are not necessarily responded in detail by this minister. I'm not sure...
Correctional services.
I'm not sure... Hold on. Thirdly, the issues of the free the dairy farm and the state capture, I would have thought that a judicial commission on state capture has been established, and on that basis alone, my understanding of the rules of the MSOP is that once the matter is dealt with by a judicial body, it becomes sub judice, and also that of the free the dairy farm. But then, Minister, it's entirely up to you to decide whether you want to respond to those questions or not. Honourable Engelberg.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Minister, thank you very much for briefing us this morning. You specifically spoke about the overcrowding and about the 939 additional bed spaces, which I think is very honourable. Yet, however, we're looking at an overcrowding situation of around about 50,000 people. That's plus minus, I'm not sure if the stats might be slightly different, 50,000 people in this country. So we've got a huge challenge in our country in terms of overcrowding. So I'd like to know from you directly, we need, and my previous colleague mentioned it, we need to look at how we look at our justice system differently. And one of our problems is the remand detainees. You've got around about 5,000, maybe more people that are remand detainees. We don't appear to be addressing those crises. So we've got clogged up courts. We've got jam-packed cells. We've got people. So I need to find out from you, Minister, what are you going to do about this? I appreciate it's 139, but it's not sufficient. We need a radical solution to this problem. Thank you. Thank you, G.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine would be just a few questions to the Minister. Minister, one is with regard to the integrity of the Justice Department itself. Minister, there's been allegations of racism reported to the South African Human Rights Commission with regard to two employees of your department who used the social media referring to their colleagues as baboons and monkeys. And with the preliminary assessment, it has been clear that there's a prima facie violation in terms of the right to equality and the human dignity. With regard to the integrity, that the nation is looking up at the Justice Department, what can be the comment of the minister in that particular matter? Then two, it's with regard to a pilot project on the use of indigenous languages in our courts. Has the Justice Minister consulted with the Chief Justice or Heads of Court? If not, why not? If so, what is the response from the side of the Minister? Lastly, from me, on our chair, is with regard to youth employment. Likely, this committee shares its membership with a committee of COPTA, Public Service and Admin, Youth, Women and Intergovernmental Relations. Specifically to youth employment, in terms of your medium-term budget policy statement, Minister of 2017, it was highlighted that there will be recruitment of young people, 900 in 2017-2018 financial year, 920 youth in 2018-2019 financial year. On top of that, the president of the country, Honorable Matamela Ramaphosa, made also a commitment in 2018 State of Nation Address with regard to the issue of youth employment. I just want to check if there has been a recruitment of youth, where has it happened? And lastly, from my side, based on the recruitment of young people with the purpose of ensuring that the skills development, there's been a report with regard to the non-payment of stipends for learners in your department. What is your take in that particular matter?
Minister?
Let me, on the outset, indicate that I think that when it comes to details, detailed figures about youth unemployment and other operational matters, if the chair will indulge me, I'd ask that the departments and entities, as they present their respective APPs, respond maybe even individually to concrete measures they've taken and concrete achievements they've realized in that regard. It's safe to say that we consider it an inevitable and a necessary intervention for our own survival, because people retire, people die, people resign and go for greener pastures, people go for different branches within the justice career path, and that creates space alone and the need for replenishing. But over and above that, we expand our services as we build more courts, as we build more correctional facilities. There is human resource capacity needed to run around those operations. So necessarily, there will always be a need for injection of fresh blood against the backdrop, of course, of the austerity situation that I've alluded to earlier. So that's a matter that they can elaborate more on as to how they are mitigating against the risk of us not being able to absorb the numbers that we've originally committed ourselves to in the face of these challenges. But on the the issue of state capture, and the effectiveness of the justice system. Of course, Sean Abrams is here. He can talk for himself. So can the SIU head, Advocate Matibi, as to how effective they have been in effecting consequence management in relation to various areas of corruption. Let me just indicate that I know the buzzword today in South Africa is state capture. I have my own philosophy about state capture. I think the state was captured in 1652. Mm-hmm. but that is a politics for another day. What we are dealing with here, whatever language we use, is corruption. And let's deal with corruption for what it is. It is for that reason that we even passed an anti-corruption law as one of the tools in our toolbox to deal directly with the phenomenon of corruption. I can tell you sitting here that where any tender has been issued irregularly in any of the departments I'm responsible for and has been brought to my attention, that matter is either before the SIU or before the courts. A dispute either between the department or other departments such as Treasury and whoever is the service provider concerned. You can go to my desk. You will not find any draft proclamation that is making its way to the president that is sitting on my desk for longer than 2 weeks. I don't even pay attention as to who are the persons implicated. Most of the time I don't even know who they are. There's been proclamations relating to alleged corruption at various municipalities in departments from different provinces, including the Northwest. And this has been so since the last 4 years. I do not recall any proclamation we've promoted, even with the former president, that gathered dust somewhere and didn't find its way to the SIU. If there is one, I am personally not aware of it. And I'm sure if we become aware of it, we'll make sure that it finds its way. There may have been technical issues that needed to be resolved that may have delayed some of these reports. And so I encourage anyone and everyone who has any suspected corruption that is not currently the subject of an SIU investigation or an NPA investigation to please make sure that those are brought forward so that they can be dealt with. Personally, I've made it very clear that I have no personal interest in any contract whatsoever, and therefore I have no reason to tiptoe around any allegations of corruption. All right. I, from time to time, call upon Advocate Motibi, Sean Abrams, to, in writing, give me updates on work that is being done in relation to various areas of their work. And that includes areas of corruption as well in particular. All right. We're working closely and giving support to Justice Zondo in his effort to kickstart the work of the State Capture Commission of Inquiry in the same way as we support any other Presidential Commission of Inquiry, which is our mandate. We're responsible for the Commissions Act. We will support any effort aimed at uprooting corruption wherever it occurs. All right. To the extent that Sean Abrams would be able to tell you, for example, of our engagement that has led to them embarking on a project to revisit so-called cold cases. There are matters that date back long before we were in government, long before he was in the NPA, which have gone cold. And we've said, let nothing be spared when it comes to present or past crime or corruption to ensure that all matters are taken to book. So are brought to book. So that is our attitude when it comes to crime and corruption. And if you have further ideas and suggestions, we would be more than happy. We have a challenge of overcrowding. We We have a challenge of backlog in cases in our courts. We have a challenge of our courts' roles being clogged. And we're trying to address those issues, one, by ensuring that we bring about efficiencies from our side. The Chief Justice and Heads of Courts are responsible through the National Efficiency Enhancement Committee that the Chief Justice chairs, and the provincial versions of it that are chaired by Heads of Courts in the respective provinces, to ensure that everybody who has a role to play in bringing about efficiency in our courts, that they are reined in so that efficiency is realigned. The Chief Justice has put his position clear that as far as he's concerned, the Minister of Justice has no business in accounting for the performance of courts. It is his space, it is the judiciary's space, and he has challenged Parliament, if you want to engage him, he would be more than happy to do so. And he does not take kind to the idea of a Minister of Justice representing him here and talking on his behalf about courts when he can speak for himself. So I encourage the Select Committee as well to consider inviting him to at least clarify the kind of system that he proposes of how to achieve accountability when it comes to court performance. But to the extent that we're still responsible for the performance of the lower courts, the Deputy Minister of Justice would be more than happy to come and respond to some of the issues there, and to convey a concerns to the Magistrates Commission that's responsible for the magistracy in our system. I can just indicate that the JSC not only deals with the appointment of judges, but also holds judges accountable in terms of their conduct. And the issue of non-performance amongst judges is a disciplinable offence, and therefore, and hence, there are a number of judges' matters which are currently before the disciplinary structures of the JSC in that regard. The issue of Shabir Sheikh, look, I wasn't there many years ago. I don't know how the then Medical Parole Board was constituted and operated. What I can tell you is that when I took office and I realized weaknesses in the composition of the Medical Parole Board that I found 4 years ago, I decided in consultation with the Minister of Health to reconstitute that board. What was the problem with the board? There were no specialists on the board. It was predominantly GPs, and therefore they had to defer to specialists when they consider matters that required specialist expertise. So I felt that this was flawed because, in fact, I had rejected some of their recommendations because I didn't find them sound, notably the departed, bless his soul, what's his name, Clive Debbie Lewis, where, as you know, I lost the case, and maybe they were right eventually because 6 months down the line, he passed on. People said a lot of things about former Commissioner of Police J.K. Sliba when he got medical parole, and bless his soul, were all sadly proven to have been wrong, and for the Medical Parole Board that considered his case to have been right. So there will be cases. I myself, this time last year, my cardiologist told me that with my heart operating at 18%, it was 50-50, and he gave me a turnaround of 2 years. I suppose if it went the other way, I shouldn't be sitting here with you. Maybe I'll be in a sick bed somewhere. So doctors project these things, and you know, the dear Lord has his own way of doing things. So who am I really to question an expert opinion at a particular point in time, whether it was based on dishonesty or whether it was a genuine assessment at the time of the health condition of a person. But beyond that, if people want to make any specific proposals, I'd be more than happy to look at those, especially if they're made in writing. The issue of racism in our own department, look, just over a year ago, there was a judge who resigned because of racist utterances. So if it happens even at that level, amongst people who are supposed to be the ones that uphold the Constitution, it gives you an idea of the depth with which this phenomenon is embedded in our society. The fact that we continue to have this this incident perpetrated by prominent people tells us the true story of South Africa, that over two decades later, we cannot imagine that 300 years of colonial and racial society that we emerge from could suddenly be wiped off. It will take time, but we have to soldier on and deal with the issues as they present themselves to us, and refine our measures to combat racism and other isms, not just racism. There's a deep problem of sexism in South Africa. We should talk about that as well. So those are the challenges of our society that we need to confront going forward. And of course, the issue of the humane treatment of inmates, having subscribed to Mandela rules and all the other national and international instruments, the humane treatment, the overcrowding, and whether we will ever crack the 50,000 excess beyond our capacity of 120,000. Into the future, the department envisages to roll out at least about 18,000 additional bed spaces in the next decade. Clearly, that is not going to crack it either. So overcrowding is something that I suspect is going to be with us for a little longer, especially because the bulk of our inmates are there for the long term because of the violent nature and the serious nature of the offences they commit. So the solution really, in my view, is that we shouldn't be having these high levels of crime in the first place. This upsurge of different typologies of crime, we're now seeing bank heists and cash in transit heists, rearing up their ugly head again. We're seeing issues of gender-based violence and violence against children, rearing their ugly heads again. These are societal issues, ultimately, that we need to resolve. The Regional Commissioner of Western Cape, Asi Klaas, was telling me last week that since the Saldanha judgment, we have seen 5,000 or 4,000 additional awaiting trials in the whole of the Western Cape. So there has been an upsurge in this province in particular in violent crime. And you can explain it very simply by just looking at the appalling socioeconomic conditions that continue to prevail in Nyanga, in Langa, in Guguletu, in the Cape Flats, in all the other colored townships, etc. We need to address the underlying social and socio-economic drivers of crime. Until we turn around issues of unemployment, inequality, and poverty in this country, until we address issues of racially based, historically based, or influenced inequality, socioeconomic inequality in this country, and until all South Africans make it their business to help in changing the material conditions of the population as a whole, we will continue to have all South Africans at risk of serious and violent crime. So it benefits everybody to put our bit in ensuring that we change the situation around. I think in the interest of time, Chair, allow me to just confine myself to those major issues, and if there are other issues, officials are here to take the matter forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. With regard to the question on youth employment statistics, I think you can still forward that information later to us as a committee. We recognize the fact that statistics cannot be responded to on the spot. It requires some research, and you have to be accurate on your responses. With the greatest of respect, Mr. Abrams, I'm not going to allow you to respond to that, isn't it? Please.
Thank you.
Okay. Mamam Patel, I think you can come now. Yes, yeah, you may, Minister. Thank you very much for coming. Mamam Patel. Thanks.
May I make up front request, because we are furnished with copies of the presentations up front, may I humbly ask that the presenter not read for us, would read for herself, instead she can just work over the presentation for the benefit of time.
I want to believe you'll be able to do that, to talk to the issues and then like going through everything in the 30 minutes. 30
minutes.
30 minutes it is. sorry about that. And more so that you came so early. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. As has already been alluded, we will just touch on the high level. And for that reason, on the contents, I'm just going to go then strictly into number 6 and number 7. I will be skipping the introduction, and the mandates are already clear, and it is what they are, it's for completeness, and the vision, mission, values are already discussed. Maybe let me start on slide number 14 that talks about the strategic goals of the department. Just to reiterate as well, it's about one, the deployment of people, processes and technologies to ensure that we really meet our service delivery obligations. It's about a people-centered justice system. Yeah, a people-centered justice system that's accessible, reliable and efficient. It's about corporatized services that are accessible, reliable and efficient. Corporatized, cost-effective and integrated quality legal services, and lastly, promotion of constitutional values. And we have then identified that there are two ways that we're going to look at our strategy. We're talking about the transformational agenda of the department. That's where we drive all the projects and programs on transformation. Then there's a sustained agenda of the department. That's where we deal with our funded mandates at service delivery points. So the four themes that we had identified were transformation of the legal profession and mechanisms for access to justice, and theme 2, transformation of state legal services, theme 3, transformation of the criminal justice system and restoring public confidence, and 4, entity oversight and institutional arrangements. So I'm going to then touch on what we're doing on the four themes that have been mentioned, and also then on the sustained agenda. Changes to the planning document, I'm not going to go through that. You will notice that the changes inside the document itself, and if you're not clear, you can see why those changes were made on slide number 16, number 17, and number 18. theme number one, transformation of legal profession and mechanisms for access to justice. The first objective that we deal with there is about access. The transformational agenda on access is about us ensuring that we provide access, and by doing that we measure, we actually do perception surveys that says to our people, are we actually providing more access? Are you perceiving that we're doing that very well? And we run perception surveys, and for that we want to really improve from the 56% that we have got to 70% in 2020-2021. And our program for access will continue the alignment of ministerial districts, as the minister has already said, and building of new courts. And you will see on slide number 21, we have targets then for both alignment of our provinces with ministerial districts, as well as the number of justice service points that we want, or the courts that we want to complete. And yeah, the targets are on slide 21. On objective 10 still, or on theme number 2, transformation of state legal services, the objective number 10 that's in our APP talks about the transformation of state legal services, and also under the same thing is objective 11, legal costs paid by the state. So you will then see in that objective that we are, as part of the transformation of state legal services, we would like to have a combined function of the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors and State Attorneys under a new program called State Legal Services. So this is what we intend to do, and we are moving with speed, in fact, around that project. And other transformational issues that we are going to tackle talks about, and I'm on slide 23, it talks about the briefing patterns that we want to improve on, that we must put more PDI. We talk about allocation of briefs to female counsel, and we also talk about not only the percentage the percentage of the value, but also the percentage of the number of briefs that we send to PDI counsel. And really, at the end of the day, we want to grow the number of PDI practitioners from the current 1,200 to at least 1,600 by 2021. So that's now on transformation of state legal services. And legal costs paid by the state, we want to achieve a drop of 5% year on costs. And how are we going to drive those costs down is there are a number of policies that we have identified that must go to cabinet. Those are state legal representation policy, tariff policy, briefing policy, and mediation policy. And on top of those policies, we want to ensure that our own state attorneys appear in the high courts, and that we the high court driver cases like medical negligence and wrongful arrest, that we better manage those costs going forward. So that's what we then intend to do on the transformation of the legal services on costs. Targets then are on page 25. They continue on slide 25. Then moving on to theme number 3, transformation of the criminal justice system and restoring public confidence. You will notice that falls under our objective 2 in our APP. We talk about an efficient and effective integrated criminal justice system. Here we work with the criminal justice system members to ensure that the number of cases that are sitting on the backlog roll are reduced. But I want to mention to members that you will notice that the number seems to be going higher rather than going down. But this is due to the fact that we have improved our data capturing capabilities. So where we thought cases were actually low, or the number was low, it actually was going to be higher than it was. So, but we still work within, or the department participate in the provincial efficiency enhancing committees and national enhancing committee to ensure that we align with our partners within the criminal justice system to ensure that backlog cases are addressed, or that we are going to continue to push down the number of cases on the backlog. So that's under objective 2. So as a department, what will we be doing? We'll be now focusing on our own postponements, ensuring that the number of postponements are decreased, or that we keep the number of postponements that due to us as a department as low as possible. We are working as a department on an integrated criminal justice strategy and we want to get that approved by the end of the financial year. We want to ensure that the issues of children at the Child Justice Preliminary Inquiries are finalized within 90 days. And like I said, we want to ensure better accuracy in capturing of the criminal data so that we have a 100% clear picture of what is going on. And we will develop a system for tracking appeals and reviews. Moving on, I still under theme number three, unfortunately it doesn't show on the board. The things don't show, we don't see the whole slide, but it has been distributed. Objective number three, and still on the execution and effective integrated criminal justice system, the targets then that I talked about on the previous slides are shown in slide number 28. On objective four, enhancing a victim-centric criminal justice system, again, from our perception surveys, we want to ensure that our satisfaction levels increase from 48% in 2017-18 to 60% in 2019-20. That's really our objective to on that objective. And what we'll be doing is we'll be focusing on continuing to adapt courtrooms in line with sexual offences model. So we'll continue with that project of sexual offences rooms. We will, for the first time, talk about the femicide watch. This is a United Nations directive on the issue of femicide that's grappling the whole world, and we are expected to start doing some work on the identification and capturing and management of femicide. And it's in our plans for the first time this year. We are working on a victim-centric strategy. We want to finalize that by the, or it has been drafted, we want to start implementing that in 2018-19. There are some sexual offences courts whose CCTV cameras were aging and were breaking down. This was one of the major complaints we had last year, and we put it in our APP that all those CCTV cameras that are not fixed must be fixed. And on the issue of the NRSO, as the Minister has already mentioned, we will then work on ensuring that we've got a proper register with validated names on the register, and that going forward we have proper process or clearer processes around how to put names on the NRSO. This is very important because we know that people like teachers need to be vetted and need to be vetted with agencies. The department is aware and we are working very hard on that. So the targets based on what I've just mentioned is on slide 30. Integrated Family Law Services, the objective is really to ensure that the children that we assist more and more children whose families are going through disputes. And you will see on slide number 32, what is it that we're going to do there. We're going to continue to improve mediation services for children. We're going to improve efficiencies within the child support system. We're going to ensure that we improve the turnaround times where reports of children must be lodged in court. And we are going to ensure that we comply with international laws around child abduction or the Hague Convention. Slide 33, our target then on the number of children that we want to assist. For 2018-19, we're talking about 22,500, it will go to 27,500. And the target then around issues of children, where we're going to ensure that we finalize 50% of litigation matters, and those non-litigation matters must be finalized within 6 months. We must ensure that we finalize those because those are then within our control. We're going to ensure that where family advocates must lodge papers, that they are done on time, and that the maintenance matters are finalized, or at least 70% of them must be finalized within 90 days. Objective 7, efficient and effective civil justice system. On the civil justice system, the biggest program or project that we're dealing with is the issue of court annexed mediation. We want to ensure that many of the civil matters that we deal with in the court are done through mediation. And for that, we are going to then increase the number of court annexed mediation courts. On one hand, and on the other hand, we want to also ensure that the number of cases that are mediated are also increased. So on slide number 36, we've got targets around that. For seven, there's a percentage of civil cases referred to mediation. We want to grow that to 60% in 2018-19. But on the KPIs themselves, like I said, the courts for providing civil mediation services for 2018-19, we're targeting 30. And then we also want to ensure that all the taxation matters that must be done within time on civil cases. Transformation of the South African legal system. The aim of this area is really to bring in the policies that assist with the transformation. And for this financial year, we have targeted that the policy on the lower cost reform must be finalized by February 2019. The policy on judicial governance and court administration must also be finalized next year, February. The framework on the overhaul of the criminal justice system, as well as the blueprint on community courts, as the minister has said, must all be finalized in 2019. These are, like I said, those are the four key transformational policies that will change how our courts operate. Then, moving on to the sustained agenda, what is it that we are mandated to do and must do and is funded? The first one, ensuring unqualified audit opinions. We want to ensure that all the funds of the department and the performance of the department is unqualified. But I must mention at this stage that under the second bullet there, we have obtained unqualified opinions up to 2015-16. So in 2015-16, the department got an unqualified opinion on both the votes account, the Guardians Fund and the President Fund. That was in 2015-16. But in 2016-17, last financial year, we were qualified on our vote account, and we were also qualified on predetermined objectives. So we're looking forward that in the audit that we are having, that we are going to revert back to having unqualified opinions for our vote and our predetermined objectives. So then on slide number 40, just to clarify as well, the estimated performance for the audited performance for 2016-17, unqualified without significant findings, those are the funds, the Guardians Fund and the President's Fund. Those two funds were clean audits, so that's what we call clean audits. They were totally unqualified with no significant findings. Now, the third party fund last year was unqualified, but with significant findings, and the vote itself is the one with predetermined objective that were qualified. So that slide I'm clarifying because I think there was a wording confusion there. So we expect that going forward, really by 2018-19, everything must really be unqualified. So that's what we're working towards. And how are we going to get there? Our internal audit ensures that they identify projects that will audit projects that will assist us to get there. Where there are findings, we track those findings. We must finalize those findings before the audit. And the new indicator that is shown there is the one that shows that our invoices must be paid within 30 days. It's one of the big issues within government that we have to take care of. Now, moving on to still on program one, the issue of FAIA, the department had it in the APPs before. We have brought it back because we really want to ensure compliance around FAIA. So we will then continue to monitor we're going to continue to train public bodies on FAIA, and we're going to also monitor our own compliance with FAIA, ensuring that all cases are finalized within 60 days. Court services, all the indicators on court services are already mentioned under the 14th, so there's nothing on court services. Now, under program 3, state legal services is part of our sustained agenda. We start with the masters. Let me then take you straight to slide number 49. Our objective in masters is really to increase access to services in the masters environment. And how we do that is we roll out the PIS, the paperless estate administration system, and the master's own verification technology. Those two technologies enable people to lodge documents at the magistrate court. So we really want to ensure that the PIS and the MOVIT we continue to roll those out so that people simply go to the magistrate court. And you will see for 2018-19, we will be stretching that to 30 more service points, and for MOVIT, we'll do 15 more. And the turnaround time for master services, 9.1 for estates, Trust Guardian Funds 9.1 up until slide number 51 are standards. We have seen them before, and right up to slide number 52. And on state legal services, the two state law advisors give legal opinions, and our objective really is to give legal opinions that withstand constitutional muster or constitutional challenges. And we will continue to do that. But most importantly as well, we must meet the agreed turnaround time. So the service must be done on time, but it must also be done within good quality standards. So our target then on 54 is that most of our legislations and instruments must be right, but 12.1, 12.2, 12.3 up until 12.6, all those then are our turnaround times to ensure that we do them on time. And those are also standards we've seen them before. Moving on to objective number 13 on slide number 57. International obligations, the most important thing about that is that we must comply with all our international obligations, and that entails finalizing country reports on our obligations, and also dealing with the cases related to international obligations that we do them on time. And you will see then on slide number 13 we talk about the objective indicator, talking about the compliance. And then on slide 59, we then talk about what we will be able to deliver in the country report. The request for extraditions must also be done within 25, or 91% of them must be done within 25 days. The target is there. And we will continue to negotiate bilateral agreements. Slide number 60. Objective number 14 talks about the legislative instruments. We always have a list of legislation that we finalize with the leader of government business. We ensure that those are done. We will also ensure that our rules that are needed are done, and we also ensure that our research papers are done. So on slide number 61, all the legislative instruments must also qualitatively withstand constitutional muster. That's the outcome that we wish for. And like I said, the program is shown on slide number 62. With regards to objective number 15 that talks about fundamental human rights, the first program that we are still working on and that's coming to an end is that EU-funded SEJA or socio-economic justice program that we work with Foundation for Human Rights. So that program will continue, and most importantly also around this objective, we want to finalize the National Action Plan on xenophobia and related intolerances. Those are the two key ones that we want to achieve. And slide 64, our human rights program, we really want to ensure that people are aware of the Constitution, that the objective of our human rights programs on slide 64. Then moving on slide 65, those are then the activities that we will be doing. So we'll continue with our campaigns 15.1 to 15.6 on slide 66 talks about those campaigns that we intend to do, whether it's campaigns, it's policy dialogues, it's research around human rights, I mentioned. And then lastly, under 15.7, we want to ensure that the long-outstanding National Action Plan is now finalized by December of 2018. TRC, we have done quite a lot on TRC. We have done education, education benefits. We are busy with handovers. It's an ongoing activity, and we've already paid reparations. The two outstanding issues are regulations on health and housing that we are working with the relevant department. And community rehabilitation. And of the 18 community rehabilitation projects that have been identified from the 128, we want to ensure that 10 of those are handed over then by 2021. Those targets are shown on slide number 68. And finally, Chair, under the integrated criminal justice system, we talk about our 28 KPI program, where we want to ensure that all the 18 KPIs are tracked. We are sitting at 18. We are attempting to get to 26 we are at 22. We are attempting to get to 26 by the end of the financial year. and 28 by 2021. And that is one, but two, we want to ensure that all the 8 departments that must integrate on the IJS are indeed integrated. And you will see slide number 71 talks about then the 28 KPI, and slide number 72 talks about the government entities that must exchange information, one under 20.1, and that we must ensure that they are part of the integrated test lab on 20.2. So, Chair, then this is the end of the presentation. We looked like we got guidance then for this APP from other national departments like PPME, National Treasury. We have worked with the clusters, the JCPS, the DNA, and other outcomes. Those indicators have been brought into our APP. But I must mention that we have budget constraints. Budget constraints are a major issue of the department, and we will continue to ensure that we do our best to uphold the delivery even under the difficult budget situation that we have as a department. Thank you.
I said, I'm going to call him, my cat was found. DG, I don't know, but I wouldn't love to dwell into the budget itself. Because figures need their own time. And I think you will circulate that to us, because we only received the APP without the budget.
Okay.
Yeah, if you can circulate that to us, so that we know exactly what you got allocated and what we're spending, so that we can be able to monitor you.
Okay.
On the basis of what has been allocated to you. There is a person who lost a very expensive phone, probably lost by mistake in the bathroom. If they can come to me and tell me what type of a phone is that, I will give it to them. But it's a very expensive phone. Questions and comments, honorable members? Yes, ma'am.
There are other members who would like to give more detail on the questions that you asked. So I just want clarity whether you want to ask questions on the APP and then give them a chance to elaborate on the questions you've asked.
Yeah, with regard to the responses, members will throw questions. If a question is relevant to a particular section or entity, the head of that entity in the delegation will respond to accordingly.
Okay.
Yeah, let's take it that way.
Okay.
Members, questions and comments? Yeah, Mama Moan.
Thank you, Chairperson. First and foremost, let me appreciate the presentation. The presentation must start with the strategic planning that you refer. I don't know how do they monitor their court.
For instance, if you go to Mtata, that's a pig style court.
A what?
Pig style. Very, very modern. Very dirty. There's not even a toilet. The in toilet there's no door to close. I'm talking of something practical. We can even go now to regional court. That's one. Two. In Umtata, there was a space which was bent down. All the time that they prevented not to be built up, the electric wires are around the walls. Very pathetic situation. Go to Ngaleni. When you go to Ngaleni, you cannot say this is a court. That's why the criminals take the advantages of the police. The men at the courts are so low and very, I cannot understand what is taking place. Even the lock, to open the door, there's no lock. How the strategic planning is catering for the infrastructure of justice? That's my question. I wanted to understand, Professor, in the issue of legal aid, what is the criteria when it comes to assist? I'm sure I'm asking this for the second time. We had a case of Wele Kaya Dalije. He's 12 years, he's never been assisted.
We've been trying to apply for this legal aid and there was no support from the government. So that's why I'm interested in the criteria they look at when they want to assist us. And secondly, I was listening to the minister say he's proposing the change in the parole. My question is, if this legal aid is so quick, what is the provision of the victim? Because all these documents are quiet about the victim. You look from page one to page last, there's no issue about the caring of the victim in the process. The issue of NPA. How did they make follow-up where the cases are not prioritized as much as they dangerous are? For instance, one example was a case in Tsolo where a person get in and gun down the wife and the husband. When I'm talking about the criteria, I'm just attaching the manner of making a killing. There's a difference, George, when a person is killed on the street. When a killer is coming to you in front of your children, and this document doesn't have anything about the position. As a budgetary component of a project, whatever you can name it. Nothing, absolutely nothing is happening to that. It was even televised, that incident. Coming to the SIU, I've seen them going into other countries and so forth. But how do they link when their investigation, the foreigners and the activities in South Africa and the country that person is coming from, who are not of giving any protection to our own country, are having a problem. SIU, how many, because this is talking about annual performance plan. Chairperson, the issue of a document can say all the issues that can be saying this department is just doing the very issue. But when you go to the ground and going to the ground, the budget and the expenditure doesn't talk to the outcomes on the ground. So there's a lack of the cost of the budget to the incidences on the ground.
I will come the second round. There will be no second round, Honorable Wana, because of the time pressure. And I think you had your big bite. I give you a big bite.
For the sake of peace.
Any other member? Thank you very much. Can we have responses? Please indicate by show of hand if you want to respond to a particular question. We've got only one set of questions. I don't know who's relevant to what entity. Yeah. DJ, you'll lead us in that particular aspect.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps what we will do is I'll hand over to Advocate Skosana to deal with matters relating to infrastructure.
Yeah.
His DGG for services. In the absence of our colleague from Legal Aid South Africa here, I will deal with those questions to the extent that I can. And then the others are quite straightforward. The NDPP will deal with the NPA matters, and the head of SIU will deal with those matters.
Okay. You're then going to start with Mr. Advocate Skosana.
Indeed.
Yeah. And Rotam came to the teaching.
Stokoze Stark. Thanks, honorable members. May I start by acknowledging the term state of our court. And it's coming from two perspectives. One is the what has been inherited, but also is the weakness of our policies, not just the court. Any court we build today, we still have an absence of a continuous or sustainable maintenance plan to that court. If you buy Mrs. Benz and you forget to take the maintenance plan as part of the payment, that car will not take to the 5 years we must have. And that's the reality we have. All this time in the past, we've been budgeting for costs in terms of construction from public works, but you never had a budget for maintaining that court beyond to ensure its posterity and sustenance, etc. And those are the issues of engagement with public works. That does not help to make an investment of 1 billion in Limpopo, but still do not have an effective mechanism to maintain that investment, etc. And they've been very cooperative in terms of the looking of the delegations, but also giving the tenants the delegation to do some of the things, etc. So that we do not only complain to public works, but we are able to do some of the things that we must do, etc. So those delegations basically provide us with certain responsibilities to maintain, to replace their locks, whatever, etc. We've limited the issue that public works must do, which I think that would require engineers, because justice would not appoint engineers, whatever, but we can appoint people, the handy person, handy men and handy women, to change the locks, whatever, etc. And our budgets are talk to those kinds of arrangements, etc. Government doesn't have insurance for burnout properties. All those gets paid through the very same process of the budget vote, etc. That's why it takes many years to repair Pretoria Court, which has burned down, the Polokwane Court, etc. Because it must come back to the baseline budget and provide money for the unplanned or 19 consequences to repair that court, etc. And the whole issue of the management of the maintenance program by public works. There's a lot of engagement between the two of us, but there are certain responsibilities we are taking over as a department, etc. And you realize that there's much improvement in terms of new courts. We are struggling to renovate the old courts, which basically some of them are not in a state even to be renovated, but need to be brought down and rebuilt, etc. Through the minimum budget that we have, etc. Two things.
I humble to Judge Scorsese. My advocate, my issue is within the document, the issue of budgeting for maintenance of the infrastructure is silent. I'm not saying they can hire engineers or whatever. And I'm saying the cost that is reflected doesn't talk to the issues on the ground. Mm-hmm. And second, Chairperson, I'm not saying the explanation what is given to me makes me very emotionally sad, because I was expecting that this thing was reported to public works and they're going to make follow-ups. I'm not policing, but I'm expecting to understand that the court in Mthatha is an old court. I'm aware of that. But the issue currently are very much unbearable.
Okay, you were meant to avoid another one. Can we agree, if we can explain, my understanding is that almost all the portfolio of government property is in the Department of Public Works. Is that the case with the courts as well? And how do you integrate or how do you cooperate with the public works in terms of issues of maintenance and so on? Honorable Mavi?
Can I also put a light, because in terms of the report of the department itself, in terms of their appearance before the committee in May 2017, the department reported 769 million on infrastructure allocation. And they went further in October to do a vitiation of 300 million. So I'm saying, based on that, can they also clarify us how was the money spent? If they are saying to us it's the responsibility of the public works.
Brother Kosan, if we can be brief, please.
Let me just be brief. One, we the department budget from its allocation for construction and day-to-day maintenance of infrastructure. There are certain responsibilities which are within public works, like the addition or planned, we call it planned maintenance. But because the capital works, the mandate of public works, we operate within the delegations that are devolved by delegations. For everything that require improvement, maintenance, whatever, the department can only repair or improve the thing up to 100,000. Those are delegations that are set by public works for all government departments, not only for justice, etc. So if it's beyond that point, we need to go through the approval process through the public works so they give the budget, even though you've got money. You still have to get the approval because your delegation as the department, all department, is limited to 100,000. Two, there are those things which you are not allowed to pay as the users, like issue of electricity and issue of the replacement of, issue of the air cons, and issues of the additions, that is putting a new infrastructure which require the municipal approvals, whatever. So I mean, day-to-day maintenance with 100,000. Relates only to the broken windows, to the handles, to whatever which you can do. Anything beyond that gets reported to public works. Now, in terms of the budget, there's money that we pay to public works, which you call accommodation fees, because they are renting the infrastructure to us. So from part of our budget, there's money that we give to public works, which they use part of the money to pay for municipal services, whatever, and part of the money to maintain what is those matters which fall within their space. That gives the reason that in most of the things that are breaking down, which are not within our control and within our budget, we continue to write to public works because they must get it repaired from what we pay as rental fees, accommodation charges. Separate from the day-to-day maintenance, which the minister has spoken to, that it is within our budget and the new infrastructure center. But what we have, Chair, which we'll share with the committee. We've got a breakdown of every project, an itemized budget. Well, the money which the minister have indicated will basically tell you how much of the money will be spent in Ganduli, how much will be spent in Chata, how much have spent in BG, Potsheps, or whatever. We'll give that information.
Yeah, please do that, Advocate Kosana. Yeah. I regard that as executive undertaking. Because
yes,
you say so on behalf of the minister.
Yes.
We have it ready,
yes.
Okay. SIU, do you want to make follow-up? Okay.
Yeah. Can we have stipulations on the time frames?
On the document?
No, okay.
You can send it by tomorrow, by after this meeting, because it's ready. We can send it to the secretary.
Yeah, send it to the secretary.
Yes.
The secretary will circulate to the members.
Yes.
SIU?
Okay.
Yeah, speak into the record. Yeah.
No, thank you, Chair and Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The first question raised by the Honourable Member refers to, there's a reference to other countries, and I can only assume that the Member is reading from our presentation where we looked at global trends. And we do that, we look at global trends around corruption. We do that so that it informs our knowledge of what drives corruption, even globally, so that we can coin our strategy such that we take that into account while we prioritize national imperatives. So we've done that. This is an extract from Transparency International. It just shows what the global trends are. But to the question of the member in terms of where there's foreigners involved, I can only assume, Chair, that it's a foreigner who probably has committed acts of corruption in South Africa and sort of leaves. There's a framework within the department. If out of our investigation we identify that assets has been lost outside of South Africa and we are able to trace them. There is what, through the Department of Justice, is called mutual legal assistance, which we tap into to ensure that we trace those funds or assets wherever they've gone to. And through those legal processes, we are able to, through due process followed, recover and repatriate the monies or assets back to South Africa. In terms of the budget, Chairperson, not talking to incidents on the ground, I can only assume that the member is referring to sort of the balance between what's observed or perceived on the ground and probably the recoveries that we effect. The immediate answer there is that from what the minister has indicated as recoveries, we aim to improve our recoveries. The only issue we have is that when we put cases through the courts, we queue with ordinary litigants, and then that creates a delay. We are at an advanced stage because our legislation provides for a special tribunal, which is almost that you could call a court to deal with corruption matters emanating from SIU investigation. Through the DG and Advocate Kosana, we are at an advanced stage to re-establish the special tribunal, which will see as a measure to improve on the recoveries, and that will probably balance out the recoveries in our space. Chair, that's really my comment on the question raised. Thank you.
Mr. Abrams, can I record, honourable members, that Mr. Abrams has circulated a document on a brief overview of the National Prosecution 2018-2019. He would have prepared to present it, but because of the time pressures, I did not have the liberty to allow him to do a presentation. Over to you, Mr. Abrams.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. If I can, Chris, please deal with the issue around the NPA's budget being silent on a victim-centric approach. Of course, everything the NPA does, is in the victims of crime. After all, we are in the interest of victims. After all, we are, the people's lawyers. There are various, mechanisms in place. The alternative dispute resolution mechanism, where the accused and the victim mediate, and the matter doesn't formally go into a criminal justice process. Of course, in some instances, there's also compensation. Now, we finalized 146,090 such matters last year. We're also looking at implementing regulations so that this process is not abused and there's uniformity across the country in the utilization of the process. We have the Thuthuzela Care Centers. We currently have 55 of these centers across the country in relation to victims of sexual and gender-based violence. We've received funding from CARA, where we can roll out an additional 5 over the next 3 years. The TC matters that went through the TCC, the NPA secured a 74.5% conviction rate over the last year, which is 1,899 convictions of the matters that were reported to the Thuthuzela Care Centre. We also revisited TRC matters. And we also have the missing persons task team to trace the remains of people disappeared during the period covered by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We also lead a task team that's looking at giving effect to the Victims Charter by implementing draft bill for the compensation of victims. So we've done a bit of research on it. We're busy working on the draft bill, which we would then, of course, present through to the minister, to the ministry. We're working with other stakeholders on this as well. We think, if we do give effect to it, it'll be groundbreaking at the end of the day. My colleague here, there's not much time, but my colleague here can talk about, victim impact statements, We also pay money back to victims of crime, you know, in commercial matters and other matters. So the SCCU and Asset Forfeiture Unit work pretty closely, and of course with the SIU to give money back to victims of crime. I briefly just want to go through this. I'll spend about 5 minutes just to point out some key highlights in the document that I prepared. If that's okay with you?
No.
Thank you. Good. Then that's it. If my colleague can just touch on the victim impact statements and the two other three issues related to victims of crime. Thank you.
Okay. If you can tell us your name, colleague, we don't know your name.
Okay. The name, Chair, is Bongile Mzinyati. I am an acting Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions,
okay,
responsible for the National Prosecution Service.
Okay.
Thank you. I was out when the question was asked, but I was informed that it related to what the NPA is doing. In relation to its victim-centric approach. And so I try to focus in that direction in addition to what the NTPP has said. There is two strategic focus areas in the NPA in the area of victims, in addition to what the NTPP has mentioned. And the first one is the Court Preparation Officer Program. This is a program in which in every province, we have got a court preparation manager. Now, the court preparation manager manages a group of people called court preparation officers. The function of the court preparation officer is to assist witnesses and victims, especially during the time of trial preparation and during a trial stage. So their footprint is very visible in the area of sexual offences and in the area of child witnesses. Now, what a court preparation officer does is they interact with the victim without getting into the merits. So they don't seek to overtake or even replace the job of the prosecutor. They prepare. We all know that the court environment can be a daunting environment, especially for people who don't use court all the time, like professionals. So they, before the witness testifies, they take the witness or the victim or the child through the court process, telling him that you are going to meet the person called the magistrate. He's going to be wearing a black gown. There will be a prosecutor. You will be asked questions, and so on and so on. It is a flagship project that the NPA has been rendering for a number of years. And it is a program, Chairperson and members, that we are particularly proud of, because in the last victim survey of last year, it was specifically highlighted that of all the victim interventions by the clusters in the by the various players in the criminal justice system, the satisfaction level of the respondents to the survey did mention that it was very, very useful, this court preparation program that the NPA is leading. Very briefly, that's what the CPO program does. And then secondly, there is another strategic focus in relation to the compilation of what we call victim impact statement. Now, a victim impact statement is a statement that once the perpetrator or the accused has been found guilty of a serious offense, the prosecutor has got a role to play in bringing forth evidence in aggravation of sentence so that the sentence can be more severe. That can be done just by calling other witnesses who can explain what the impact of the offense was on the victim. It can be done through calling the accused or the victim himself, but the victim impact statement itself is a professionally taken statement that sometimes even involves professionals that will, in a scientific way, explain what the impact has been to this victim. So we last year we had it as part of our APP, but this year it is a strategic focus which has been removed from the APP. But all the directors of prosecutions are aware of the strategic instruction that victim impact statements must be obtained. In fact, the usage of victim impact statements is actually a target area that we monitor on a monthly basis. And there's been several court cases, especially in the Supreme Court of Appeal, where the NPA has been taken to task by Supreme Court of Appeal judges about not using this impact statement more often and efficiently. And that is why now it has become a specific strategic focus. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, HOD, in less than 5 minutes, please. I may not permit follow-up. You have all the right to follow up with the delegation, even outside the meeting, honourable members. We've got time pressure, so we still have the cocktail issues to deal with, middle of this meeting. DG?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm going to be surprisingly brief. on the department side, when it comes to victims of crime, we are overhauling the Criminal Procedure Act, which was passed in 1977, which predates the Constitution. It's generally been very silent on the protections that victims need, and the overhauling is going to focus on that, as the Minister pointed out in his political overview. I will leave it at that. With regard to Legal Aid South Africa, unfortunately, a specific example was given. I'm unable to comment specifically on the example because, as a matter of principle, Legal Aid South Africa uses a means test. So it depends on the income of the person who applies for legal aid, whether or not they are eligible for it. And it probably wouldn't be appropriate for the salary details of the person concerned to be perhaps disclosed here. But I'm happy that if such information is available, can be shared with me, I will take it up with the CEO of Legal Aid South Africa. And we can perhaps even provide a written response from Legal Aid South Africa to the committee in that regard. Such chairman.
Yeah, let's talk with you on the written response, so that the member gets it personally, because you see, it refers to she refers to a specific matter.
Yeah. And I assume this is the king.
Yeah. Dalinja, yes. Dalinja. Honourable members, I think we should leave it at that. We really apologise. We have time pressures. We needed to have a whole day on this department. This is quite a big department. But going forward, I think we shall improve, especially on time and start earlier and have ourselves a lot of time to engage on issues. Thank you very much, the delegation from Justice. Thank you, TG. Give our regards to the Minister and the Deputy. Thank you very much for coming. The meeting stands adjourned.
Yeah, well, she knows the operations of the master. She's the executive.